adjective of or relating to the claimed occurrence of an event or perception without scientific explanation, as psychokinesis, extrasensory perception, or other purportedly supernatural phenomena. Hi, I'm Tom Savino, and Savino Veritas tonight will be exploring paranormal experiences. Join quantum activist Mona Lee and Savino Veritas favorite, in an encore appearance, Aaron Morgart, for tonight's exploration into the paranormal, into the mystic.
Is intended for mature audiences.
Good evening. It's Veritas News. I'm Sal Monella. The policeman in Katy, Texas, who angrily and repeatedly yelled for minutes at a 14-year-old black girl to get your ass down on the ground, needs to take either an anatomy class or a topography class, since the girl's ass was squarely on the ground the entire time. Further confusing his anatomical knowledge following his demand was the violent shoving of the girl's face into the grass. Because he seemed to know where the ground was based on how he positioned the girl, McKinney authorities say he can skip the topography class, but needs the anatomy refresher course since he can't seem to tell a face from an ass. Speculation about the officer's poor body knowledge has arisen based on reports that his former girlfriend exclusively just kissed him whenever he repeatedly demanded she sit on his face. At yoga class, he'd be in headstand when the teacher called for the class to sit in lotus. Hauling the handcuffed into the back of a patrol car, he'd invert the bodies of the arrested, put his hand on their butts, and push down so their asses wouldn't hit the roof of the car. The McKinney officer will have lots of time now to take classes since he resigned after the incident. Fellow officers are relieved he resigned, expressing doubts about his propensity for violence on police calls. For example, they report he gleefully loaded his pistol and quickly headed to the patrol car when a swimmer's party complaint call came in, shouting, quote, "Let's go shoot pool," end quote. His colleagues, however, resisted describing the officer's tendency for violent reaction as knee-jerk, reminding us of the officer's habit of confusing body parts. At least one Republican presidential hopeful, Rick Perry, has finally addressed climate change in a plan he says will not only halt but reverse the melting of the Earth's poles while increasing the sale of GMO corn and revenue of air travel, tourism, and the film industry. Perry proposes projecting movies on the walls of glaciers to adventurous filmgoers eating Monsanto seed popcorn. The McDonald's Corporation enthusiastically embraces the idea and has sought to set up a few golden arches at the poles to offer their special beef patty for these movie showings called McIceburgers, pre-digested frozen meat needing no cooking. Perry has already invited China, hoping they will build airfields on chunks of ice large enough for landings and takeoffs. When asked how these showings will halt the melting of the ice caps, Perry said, quote, frozen. We'll just keep showing frozen, end quote. One sixth grader who asked the candidate how people would see the projected film outdoors during the many months of 24/7 daylight was given a bucket of GMO popcorn and an iceberger while escorted away from the press conference. Opponents of Perry's idea, excited by the possibility of revenue creating, but sure the poles will melt no matter what, are exploring a grand event at the North Pole where they propose to display the cryogenically frozen body of Walt Disney until he thoroughly defrosts along with the melting glaciers, and in what they call the ultimate ice cap, propose showing to Walt upon his awakening one of Disney's more recent animation films. For nostalgic reasons, in remembrance of the polar ice caps, promoters suggested showing Frozen. This is Sal Monella with Savino Veritas News. Now, Savino Veritas.
Are you ready? Are you ready?
Tom Savino, coming to you from Burbank, California, Lion's Den Studios in Burbank, California. Two very special guests tonight. I'm so pleased to have Erin Walker join us again. She was on last week. We had a great response. And also, this week we have
the bonny boat was won
Mona Lee
as we sailed into the Mystic.
We are with him now. Hello, Erin.
Hello. It's great to be back again and just a pleasure.
Well, thank you very much. And I really do appreciate you returning. We got tremendous response from your appearance last week. And as we ended last week's show, which was on social media, we privately spoke about signs that are out there that many people don't recognize, signs to guide us in the universe. And we got on the subject of paranormal activity, paranormal experiences. And I appreciate you introducing me to your friend who is a quantum activist, and we're going to get her explanation of what that is in a minute. And we're speaking with, along with Erin, is Mona Lee McCrae. Hi, Mona.
How are you doing, Thomas?
I'm doing very well. And tell us what that means, by the way. It was on your resume. I'm going to go over some of the things that are on your resume, but quantum activist.
Quantum activism, according to Amit Goswami, PhD, who was the physics teacher at or instructor professor at the University of Oregon for decades. He actually coined that phrase, And in one of his more recent books, it's titled How Quantum Activism Can Save Civilization. And I believe that his point is that it is the only thing that will save civilization. It's a kind of a long description, but as you well know, people that are in fear or angry or agitated cannot function in a creative way. They cannot reach their potential. And his point is, and it's one that I very much agree on, the reason that the powers that be attempt to keep everyone hurt, afraid, angry. You know, you can't turn on a TV without being told that you're going to die from something, so go see your doctor. And then, you know, it's constant. We're being barraged with negativity. And what he says and what I believe is if you can get into a more of an alpha state, rather than attacking problems on a warlike, battlefield, this is going to sound so John Lennon, but it's really, you need to approach it from a position of love. And mm-hmm. if you understand how quantum physics works, then you know that what you say is what you get. What you imagine is what you get. Therefore, if you are imagining, actively imagining the positive timeline for in our history on the planet, that's how we're going to save civilization. It isn't going to be arguing on Facebook about politics. Mm-hmm. All of that us versus them is designed specifically to keep us helpless. And becoming a quantum activist and meditating and radiating a love vibration towards everything is going to work much better for everyone, and we can tip over that apex and get more positive than negative for our timeline.
That's very interesting. And what was that person's name again? Swami?
Amit, that's A-M-I-T.
A-M-I-T.
Goswami, G-O-S-W-A-I, Ph.D. And the book is called How Quantum Activism Can Save Civilization. And it says, a little subtitle here, a few people can change human evolution.
Wow, that's very interesting. That's something it I'm is. Going to look into. Mm-hmm. Now, additionally, Mona, you are an ovate, which is sort of a healer, is that right?
Usually, ovates are healers. In the order that I belong to, which is the Order of Bards, Ovates, and Druids out of Great Britain, it is the second level. So I went through the bardic training, which I breezed right through because I had been a musician all my life. And as you probably know, the Celts and Druids, that was how they kept their history, was through their bards. And young boys would be delivered to a druid master would be instructed. And they had to memorize over 20,000 songs and poems and things that held their entire history of their people. And they would spend oftentimes up to 20 years getting through the bardic level. Level, it has a lot of other things, coming to understand the cyclical nature of the world that we live in, and there's a lot to it, but when you move on into the ovate level, that level deals more with divination, plant lore, healing using medicinal plants. Oftentimes includes shamanic journeys.
Mm-hmm.
Some ovates become what some people would understand as, quote, a sin eater.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Where you can take a person's quote, sins or mistakes for them and dispose of them properly.
Yeah.
And let someone move on to their next, you know, if they're, especially if they're dying and they're moving, they're going to move to the other side of the veil. And it's a lot more, it's just much more mystical than the bardic level. And the druid level, those become the teachers, the masters. And they, of course, teach the lower level. And, you know, if there's something going on, it's going to be a druid that is heading up the celebration or the ritual more so than a bard or an ovate. But I have been in Obod since 1994.
I see. So could you pronounce that again? Oh, it's
Obod. The Order of Bards.
I see. That's the Order of Bards and Ovates and Druids.
Mm-hmm.
Correct? Yes.
Yeah.
Well, we're going to get more into that in a minute, but let me hear from Aaron. Aaron, tell us about some of your experiences that kind of brought up this whole topic last week and enabled us to connect with Mona.
Well, Mona and I, we belong to a very small, I call it a think tank. It's a group, and I've mentioned it to you before, Thomas, on LinkedIn. It's called The Alternate, and there are all kinds of people. It's less than 100 people, but people from all walks of life. But essentially, we have atheists, we have Christians, we have all from every type of spiritual and religious denomination are in that group. And so that is one of my favorite groups to be a part of. But within the group, occasionally we will discuss political topics and different types of spirituality. But aside from that, I have recently, within the last probably year, encountered more of a heightening of awareness as to timing and being really in tune with other people and dates, times. It's almost uncanny. I believe for a year I was continuously looking for signs for, you know, different reasons for success and whatnot, but I really was believing that I was aligning with a lot of other people. I was one of the people that would consistently see 11:11 on my watch or my phone or my clock.
Talk about signs. I just before I connected with the two of you, I picked up an audio clip of a movie that I just saw the other day for the first time, and I got the audio clip of the trailer. And the beginning of the movie, the main character just sees everywhere he goes, he sees 11:11.
Yes.
11:11. And incidentally, if you want to respond to this, Mona or Aaron, along my path of paranormal, if you want to call it, or mystical, numerology. My numerologist said my numbers are 22 and 11, especially 22, but which is a number that you don't, unlike the other numbers, you don't add them.
You don't reduce them.
Yeah,
those are master numbers.
The master numbers, yeah. And so Aaron, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but they're just, you know, it's kind of interesting. You're talking about coincidences and synchronicity and things like that. And I had just seen that trailer with the 11:11.
Yes. It's been happening literally for the last year, and it's as if I was being drawn to something, and then I would just look over at my watch, and I would see it. and not only 11/11, but 9/11, and also 3/33, and it was happening daily, and sometimes multiple times throughout the day. And I looked into that further, and I thought, well, this is really not a coincidence. And I've always had a fascination with prophecy and with, I guess if you would call it, not just spirituality, but going down further into the rabbit hole, if you will. And I'm a very curious person, and our group that we belong to on LinkedIn, we're just a bunch of curious people. So it falls naturally that we all kind of have that same thought. But after looking into this, I thought, well, there's more to it. And so I started to look into more meditation and trying to, you know, calm my life, because it's a very hectic life. And in that, I found people would occasionally try to dissuade me from an energy standpoint, and I was really trying to, you know, have a clear day, if you will, a day without too much stress. And I found, especially with the show that I'm doing, that my stress levels were like astronomically high. So I would look into meditation, I would call Mona, I would ask her, I would, you know, really try to focus more on getting a more focused mindset. And then, you know, as far as prayer life and trying to have more of a focus and being away from what I call energy vampires, especially in Los Angeles, I was trying to. Because I felt like I was getting attacked almost. I would go into LA, and I felt literally like I needed to throw holy water as soon as I crossed the county line, and then when I came back out, because I felt like something has been, it just happens. You go in, and something is taken from you, and you come back out. And I looked into that more, and of course, I'm one of the, you know, I'm a very huge conspiracy theorist, investigative person. I've always had that in me, and so I started looking into, you know, entities, because I was also having for years encounters with sleep paralysis, and I mean to the point where it was really terrifying, just absolutely terrifying. Sure. I thought, well, this can't be normal. So then I consulted with Mona, I've consulted with other people, and I have a friend, Janice Stork, who, she even painted a painting for me, and it's called Sleep Paralysis, and she discussed what it was. And so I'm aware of the things that are around us that are thwarting us from doing good, and they don't come from a place of love. And this absolutely is completely opened up my awareness into that realm, which we can sometimes call paranormal or the spiritual side of life. So that's been my encounter. And frankly, I see myself more and more into that and finding myself aligned with people who are wonderful. And it's that law, you know, I hate to use the word law of attraction. I frankly think it's been used mm-hmm. to death, and I really don't want to use it more, but it really falls into that category. So that's been my experience so far.
Well, that's interesting. As the two of you may have guessed, and I'm sure Aaron already knows me now for two shows or a show and a quarter, I like to joke around a lot, and But throughout my development, I kept having these unusual experiences. One, when I was 15, I was very ill with pneumonia, and I left my body, and I saw my body lying on the bed. And most of the people I mentioned this to, I don't mention this to a lot of people. Of course, now I'm mentioning it internationally on the radio.
Okay.
But most people I mention this to really think I'm crazy. that no such thing happens. It was a dream. It was, you know, my whatever. It was my imagination. But that certainly was a big part. Was the seed of my investigating further and further. When I was going through a divorce in 1974, and it was in New York City, these are long stories. I'm going to make very short, but I connected with this woman through business means. She was the receptionist at the governor's office of film in New York, and we were on the phone, and on the phone, for a lengthy time, she started telling me things that she couldn't possibly know. And then I said, "What? How do you know that?" And she said, "Come and meet me." And I did a few days later. And it turns out she was a witch, and she practiced Wicca. And she told me how to develop these skills. The skills that she called channeling. And when she did channel, her face actually changed. It became like round when she channeled and told me things she couldn't possibly know. I mean, she couldn't possibly know by research. And this was definitely pre-Google, too.
Right.
And so she connected me to the people known as the Jose Silva, S-I-L-V-A, then the Silva Mind Control. And I learned all these things. I diagnosed a person. I learned a scanning technique, a kind of intuitive psychic scanning technique, and saw throat cancer in a person, and indeed that was the case. Anyway, I more and more got into this area. And back to protection, though. Some years ago, I was involved with a group that was a shamanic training. It was a five-year program. I only made it through 2.5 years. And there's one of the reasons I stopped was because I was starting to, how can I say it? Dead people were starting to communicate with me. Giving
happens to me all the time.
Giving me messages. So yes, Mona, it was too much for me to handle in terms of I felt I was not psychologically ready for this. And so I stopped. Now this is like 3 years now. I haven't done any of the activities that opened me up for this, but it definitely did. So maybe you want to comment on those things.
Well, first off, Thomas, near-death experiences are often the first step for people to move on to a different way of looking at life. And so I'm not surprised there. I had a period of time where I was waking up every night at 12:12, 1:11, 2:22, and I would just wake up, look at the clock, see what it was, and go back to sleep. That was really, really bothering me. That
it was always those specific times.
Yeah, wow. And never like 1:27. It was the double or triple numbers. I never did really come to understand it. I just accepted it, and with that, eventually it went away, and I could get a full night's sleep again. I understand when you say that you weren't comfortable with dealing with people that had crossed over, or it's not just people, but there are other entities and attachments different vibrational level beings besides just what we see in our three dimensions here, you know, on a daily basis. And they absolutely will do things and cause things to make you uncomfortable. Now, this is just slightly different from the elite on the planet who do their level best to scare the hell out of Betty all the time. Attachments don't necessarily want you to be scared, but feed on energy. And so if you are not If you didn't have a guide, a teacher, someone that could help you with these things that were happening to you, then, you know, I'm getting an echo all of a sudden. Did something change?
No. No, maybe it's a, maybe it is,
were
a,
you hearing
is an entity.
Echo?
I think
it could be. They just love hanging around me. Anyway, if you didn't have someone to explain these things to you, how to protect yourself from them manipulating you, they can even stay with people through different lifetimes, through reincarnation after reincarnation. And they can cause havoc your life. And they can make you feel extremely uneasy. And a lot of times what happens is someone that you know or someone that you have traveled with in the history of your incarnations, soul family or something, they may want to reach out to you because they're now on the other side. And they don't, you know, just because you're dead doesn't mean you're enlightened. And so their learning goes on the other side too. And let's just say that you're one of their favorite relatives or something, and they wanted to communicate with you. Well, an attachment that did not have your best interest at heart could get in there and that up on purpose so that, number one, the person that's on the other side is not getting what they need to learn and become centered in their new position. And they can disrupt the way that you're hearing it to make you afraid. So they cut you off, you know, at the knees at every turn. And then, first off, they've disrupted lessons that you and your soul family person needed to work out to progress spiritually. And then if they can find a weakness within you, emotional weakness or something, they'll use those things and they actually can energetically cause things to happen. I won't say that they can all automatically cause bodily harm, but some certainly can. And when they find someone who has no defenses against their shenanigans, they will attach. And one of the things I had to learn, because it's pretty dangerous on some levels, one of the things that I had to learn early on once I found an instructor of my own, because I was already doing the work without any instruction. Mm-hmm. So I was ending up going home with all of the attachments on me.
Yeah.
And
it
was quite an experience. So I learned, you know, I intended to learn how to do it correctly so that I didn't get attached, you know.
Yeah.
I wanted to stay clean and pristine. And one of the methods that I have, two methods. One is protection. You can imagine and create an orb of protection around you. Your aura is always there, but you can imagine it into a stronger position and a reflective position so that these entities can't get into your aura in the first place. And learning how to set up the protection and make your intentions known that you are going to be healing these attachments so you don't have to fight them.
Yeah.
You need to love them away.
Oh, that's
and
an interesting
it
that
actually
yeah.
works.
That,
you know,
that's
it's
a,
not an exorcism. It's a,
no.
a soul-to-soul instruction.
Well,
that
Mona,
this
you
isn't where you belong, and let me help you get to where you belong, and therefore, and then I teach that to other people.
Well, that's your that last comment reminded me of a bon. It's pronounced, I guess it's pronounced bun, but it's B-O-N. It's most people say a bon, but it's, I think, bun, and it's Tibetan. It's Tibetan Buddhism, but it is has a shamanic history. And one of their practices is called chud, which is C-H-O-D, chud. And this practice, Mona, is, if you, again, your comment reminded me of this. The practice is that you call in these spirits, you call them to you, and you invite them to dinner, and the dinner is you. That is symbolically. So you know you visualize, and you as you visualize cutting off pieces of yourself and giving it to these as a celebration for them, in a loving way, for them not to, and then you know of course ultimately though it does protect you in this physical life.
That's I've never heard it described quite like that. So, how far have you gotten, Thomas, with your curiosity about metaphysics and paranormal and things like that?
Well, I by the way, and Aaron knows this because we talked about this last week off the air. I went in because that's just my nature to go in joking about things and so on. And even though I had paranormal experiences before, it wasn't like I didn't believe it. It was just like I went into the shamanic training with an attitude of, well, let's see what this is going to do, you know. And I was told, you know, I was taught how to protect myself. My teacher, I had two very good teachers. One was my former Jungian therapist, and the other was a woman from Mexico who had all the shamanic techniques from there.
A Santeria?
Yes. And she was the one actually who told me. Oh, so what happened was that after a little bit of training, I didn't do the protection. And I was attacked by. I went to the doctor. I was bitten. My entire body had bites all over it, and the doctor said,
"Are you awake for this?"
I think it's insect bites, but they couldn't identify the bites, and there were no insects, Then some of my teacher kind of scolded me, and she says, "You're not doing the protections in here. That's why." So if you want to mess around with this and you don't protect yourself, things like this is going to happen, and even worse. So I started protecting myself, and everything went away. They also did a group healing for me, which was like incredible. Aaron, I explained that to you too.
Mm-hmm.
And everything went. They had bites. I had kidney problems, like out of the blue. All of this stuff went away. And then from that point on, I made sure I protected myself. Then I engaged in the practices. And I was opening up more and more. But I got to the point where I was a high school English teacher. And at one point, the kids were just walking up in this middle of the class with 30 people in the class, and they're walking up to me, handing me papers, and this one girl handed me a paper, and in my mind's eye, in like a dream, I saw this young man who was like a Cholo type person. And he told me, although he didn't say, I didn't hear, but he told me somehow, his name was Alfonso. And he told me to tell the young lady who just handed me the paper, stop praying to the crucifix, just pray to the cross. And I just said, do you know Alfonso? He says, stop praying to the crucifix. And she almost She almost died right there. And, well, that was the beginning of my getting messages from people. And
well, it is very important to recognize where all the messages come from, because they can be coming at you constantly, and they can take so many different forms that you need to develop what your understanding of things are. You know, birds in flight, or, you know, just any little thing like what Aaron was talking about, you know, seeing the double numbers and so forth. And I learned that when you have a phenomenon, something, you know, out of the ordinary, and then you see something, it doesn't matter what it is, it could be a blackbird or a penny on the sidewalk or whatever, those can be affirmations of what you were just thinking.
Oh, yes.
And yeah. So it takes time, and it depends on how much work you want to put into it. Sometimes, no matter how much work you do, you're still going to go slow. In other cases, you found the right teachers or the right books or the right group of people to discuss these things with, and everything goes much more smoothly. So what it really is, and what has been happening to you, is that the other side is inviting you to step up and be a player in this spiritual game, because that's almost what you really would have to call it. Because in the end, we are all God, we are all love, everything in the universe is the same stuff. And if you want to get into physics and the observation, you know, the new thought, that it's not terribly new, but the thought that if you're not observing something, it doesn't exist.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you're familiar with all that.
Yeah.
So,
so
you cannot be separated from the creative source of the universe or the multiverses. You still have to put all the multiverses into a big something, so I still call it the universe. But it's something that people want to fight about. I don't like to put it that way. But they want to fight about Satan and, the hell burning in hell and all that stuff. They're still approaching it from that position, not realizing that we're just really holographic energy that changes depending on what we're looking at and who is looking at us. So we're always creating en masse, always. Just because you don't see the person in the next room or across the street doesn't mean that your thoughts aren't mixing with theirs and creating. And so this has been, in my opinion, your invitation. So obviously you have some gifts that you are ready to work with. And that's why these things have been happening. And so the more attention that you pay to it, the more you'll develop the skills that you need to do it well, so that it benefits other people and it benefits yourself, and you leave your ego out of it. That's one of the most important things.
Oh, yes.
Is learning to
one of the things we learned as
like that.
Our group, it's hard to put a lot of these things in words, you know. But one of the phrases that we use that seemed to hit everyone, when I speak, I'm talking about the shamanic group. We called ourselves a tribe, and we studied basically the Tao techniques, Kabbalah techniques, I forgot what the other one was. I don't know. It was a third, basically three cultures. I think it was Native Americans, I think, yeah.
Probably so.
Yeah. And those are the three techniques that we did. Oh, it's Tibetan also, because we were very much into the elements. And one thing that, anyway, what was I want, I missed my point. I wanted it had to do with what you were just saying, Mona. But
ego.
Oh yeah, ego. Thank you. So the phrase that really worked for us and me, anyway, was get out of your own way. Just get out of your own way.
It's true. We generally are always our own worst enemy, but it's also how we learn.
Yeah.
You know, if you're open-minded enough to learn, you know, these things that you were talking about when you were younger, you had the near-death experience, and, you know, these different things that were coming to you. At that point in history, because we're having just such a remarkably huge awakening, we are all incarnate on this planet right now for some very specific reasons and some very big changes to birth the next human, if you want to look at it that way. Mm-hmm. But back, let's say, in the 60s or the 70s, no one was open to that except for whoever was singing Aquarius, you know.
Absolutely.
It was like nice and sweet, and it started to open things up because a good portion of the public was stoned, and the rest of them were the total opposite. So that period of time was where those two schools of people started to accept the fact that they could learn things from each other, and so spirituality and as opposed to religiosity, and things very slowly started to open. But if you'll notice, it's been, you know, it's getting faster and faster. It's the quickening. And what the fact is that the energy that makes up all of us in this holographic little place that we live, it is all the same. We are all connected. We're never separate from each other. And so you have been recognized over and over now as someone who can help in this awakening, because there is going to come a point where our rise will hit the apex, and we're going to need to have one more quantum activist join. And I don't know if it's going to be 12 people or 144 or 144,000. It really doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. It's the energy to get over the apex and take the and birth the new human beings and the new spirituality. And so that's my take on what's been happening to you, is you're being called to service. Whether or not you decide to do it is always up to you. And in Druidry, we say, if it doesn't feel right for you, don't do it.
Yeah.
Because there will be a time, or there may not. Everyone's journey is individual, and Druidry, they totally respect that. But that's just my take on your situation and your curiosity, and your running into me and Aaron and getting on the subject, because you have a large audience who may all be sensing many of the same things. So you're facilitating and assisting in this awakening.
Well, I appreciate
to change civilization.
I thank you for those comments, Mona. And I'm, you know, before I left my shamanic group, I was on the fence about leaving, and one of our tribes people, who turns out to be a woman who has the same exact birth date as I, not just the month and the day, but the year. And needless to say, we hit it off. Well, we had a lot in common. She was very good at tarot cards, and she read for me. And there was the Four of Cups. Do you familiar with that particular card?
Yes.
The Four of Cups, and there's a man sitting with his arms folded in a kind of a pose, if you wanted to read body language, of a pose of denying or not accepting, kind of a pose. And he was under a tree, and there were three cups on there. There's three golden cups on the ground, and a cloud, and I don't, for technology people, I don't mean a technology cloud. From a mist comes a hand with the fourth cup, and it's offering the cup to this person who doesn't want to take it. And that was the card that I drew. So
you were on the fence.
I was on the fence, yes.
But that's great to recognize that and to go with your instinct. If you stick with your intuition, you're going to be okay.
Yeah.
And learn a lot and accomplish a lot. How long is your show, Thomas?
My show. Thank you for reminding me. We are listening to Savino Veritas. Live from Burbank, California, and the show is 90 minutes, so it is over at, time is really going, I'm enjoying this conversation, I hope our listeners are. At 9:30, the show will be over. At 9 o'clock, which is the bewitching hour on the East Coast, we have to break away from the news from Canada. It's a very short newscast, and we'll be back with that. And then, Mona, I did want to ask you, because one of the things on your resume, if you want to say a resume, is a clear audience. And just once in my life, and this was right after I took the Steel of a Mind Control training, I'll tell you this little story. The reason I'm out in California was because I came here to write comedy scripts. And I had a friend whose wife was working at NBC, and she was an executive, and she liked my writing, and she was she kind of took it on herself to open doors for me at NBC. But then I got involved with this paranormal or psychic phenomena, whatever you want to call it, and she had expected me to write a certain amount so that she could show people. But I got involved with the Silver Mind Control things, and I wasn't writing. So I met my friend and this woman, his wife, for dinner, and she said, "Well, do you have any material for me?" And I said, "No." And she was upset, and she scolded me, and she said, "What have you been doing?" And I told her what I've been doing, and she said, "I can't believe you would do, you believe in that? How naive can you be? How naive can you be?" But just before I left for dinner, I was in the shower, and for one and only time in my life, I actually heard, not like in your mind's ear, I heard actually a voice say while I was in the shower, "The Eight of Diamonds will figure prominently this evening." And like, who the hell even talks like that? I mean, I don't know. And it didn't scare me, but it was, and I said, I'm not playing cards, I don't know, but how could you forget that? I mean, this is many decades later, and I haven't forgotten it. So I went to dinner with them, and she scolded me about psychic phenomena and so on and so forth. And I said to her, then a little bell went off, and it said, "Now you know why you were told about the Eight of Diamonds." And I said to her while she was ranting at me, I said, "So obviously you don't believe in these things, or you're not open to them, even the possibility of them." "No, of course not. Only a naive person would do that. Only a naive person." And then I said to her, "Okay, do me a favor. Think of a card."
Oh, that's great.
And she said, "Okay, I'm thinking of a card." And I said, "The Eight of Diamonds." And almost literally, she almost died right there.
Yeah. You know what people are really asking you when they're speaking like that is they want you to prove it to them. So they ridicule it, thinking that you will defend it. And if you have a good enough defense, then they can start to accept it. You know, but they have to act like they're smarter than that. You know, it almost insults you into having to explain it. But what they're asking is to be taught. They're trying in their very awkward way to get someone to prove it to them, because intuitively they know it's the truth. But from societal norms and cultures, especially ours, it is not. And, that's what I was talking about, the past 50 or 60 years. Great changes have been made in this area. You know, the Army, back around Watergate days, had 140 programs along the lines of the MK Ultra, where they were attempting to figure out just what kind of gifts people had. Were the gifts real? Gifts of the spirit. Mm-hmm. Were they real? Do you use them at will? Because you can see why the military would be interested in something like this.
Yes, of course.
Yeah. You know, for instance, I love the all things British Crown. And they still have laws on the books in Great Britain that make it a punishable crime to visualize or imagine the monarch getting sick or injured or dying.
Really?
That's how much they believe in magic. And mm-hmm. most people don't understand what really the magic. I could go on about that for a really long time. But what I wanted to tell you when I asked that how long your show was, mm-hmm. is that I wanted to tell you about experiences that I've had with UFOs and things like that. But you said 9 o'clock, we're checking off for a news break?
Oh, 9 o'clock, it's just a minute of news, and then we'll be back.
Okay.
And then we'll have most of a half hour. We'd love to love to hear that. And everybody, we are talking with Mona Lee McKay, and Aaron Morgart. And Aaron, chime in a little with some of your experiences when we come back.
I will.
And I can't thank you enough for all your promotion and things like that. You taught me a bunch. bunch of things on social media last week. So everybody listening to Savino Veritas, coming to you live from Burbank, California. Tonight we are speaking about Into the Mystic or paranormal experiences. Clairaudience was the last story. And Mona, when we come back from the news in just a minute, Mona may explain or tell me if she actually hears, because I had that one experience where I actually heard this voice telling
all
me
the time, Thomas.
Oh, wow, okay. We'll talk about that.
The guys are always there, and I seem to have a lot of them.
Charges. Police accuse Olivia Bao of convincing a victim to work as an escort while using threats and violence as methods of control. Highway 7 will reduce to 4 lanes to accommodate subway construction. The lane reductions are to help facilitate the construction of Vaughan Met Center Station, as well as a Viva Rapidway stop. And Bell Mobility is willing to move its Mount Albert cell tower. This comes after a corral of complaints about the original location launched by many residents as well as counselors. Mostly sunny, Pearson 23, Newmarket 22. This update is brought to you by Frank Atolo on 148.ca. Microorganisms, Frank on the stuff that lives inside us on 148.ca/Frank. I'm Philip Hong from SRN National News. Now back to Tom Savino with Savino Veritas on SRN One.
So we are back. Thank you, Phil, from Canada. And we are on SRN One. And you are listening to, if you're listening now, and if, anyway, if you're listening, it's 148.ca/one. That's where you are. And that's where you can hear us live each Thursday night at 8 p.m. Pacific time, 11 Eastern, and all the other international times in between. And you can also hear us, as Aaron knows, after, in a few days, like a Monday, you can hear this show and every single show I've done 24/7 on Juiced Talk. That's J-U-I-C-E-D, Juiced, the past tense of to juice, juicedtalk.com. Just go to juicedtalk.com and you can get all of the past episodes of Savino Veritas. Now we're back again with Mona and Aaron. So all the time you'd hear actual voices.
I hear thoughts that I recognize from a vibrational frequency point of view are not my own. And so it's just a knowledge. But I recognize it in language, in English, most of the time. Sometimes there are signs or things like that, but that's just happens because I've developed it. When I was in my mid to late 20s, I was experiencing the most uncomfortable things I had up to that point in my life, because I and this happens to a lot of people, depending on their situation, they, you know, it's time for them to start working in one of the gifts of the spirit. And if you're not aware of it and you don't have, again, a teacher or teachers or a group, people that can help you with that, it can tend to drive people crazy because they don't know who to ask. It, just like your lady friend, she didn't want to look like she could believe any of that stuff, because she hadn't been properly introduced to it. But once you are introduced to it, you develop your intuitions and your insights. And I hit that age between 25 and 28 where visions were coming to me that were horrifying.
Ooh, yeah.
Terrible things of children and women, people being abused, murdered, and I would get this vision, and I would sometimes hear things, you know, like a scream or a word or something that went along with the vision, and it was driving me crazy, because those were not things that I would sit around and think about on my own. And yet, I was living in Fresno at the time, and in not a very good part of Fresno, if there is one. And
took the words right out of my mouth.
I lived there for 10 years, I can talk. And so I was getting these horrible visions, very frightening. It was scaring me. I thought I was losing my mind. And my boyfriend at the time, who I did not consider to be especially wise in spiritual things, noticed my behavior was getting worse and worse because I didn't understand what was happening. And we sat down to talk about it one night, and he said, Mona, have you ever stopped to think that those visions and voices that you're hearing aren't yours? And it just, you know, doing, yeah. I went, oh, because I had been attached, very attached, to the other side My mother's father died in my arms on my third birthday. So death and the other side were coming for me all the way through this life. And but I stepped away from it. I had different experiences as I grew up that I learned things from, but for probably from the time I was about 18 until this point in time where I was 25 or 28, somewhere in there, I hadn't paid much attention to the gifts at all. And I really forgot about it all.
Mm-hmm.
And then I realized that in order to mentally and emotionally survive it, I was going to have to work with it. And so I took it up again and started my studies in earnest and haven't really stopped since then.
Yeah.
But it can be very frightening if you don't have help.
Oh, yeah.
Someone who's a few steps further down the path.
Well,
absolutely. I was going to say, absolutely. That is essential. And, coming from a rather conservative Christian upbringing for myself, death also was a huge part of my side. I mean, most of the people on my father's side are deceased. They do have Cherokee Indian lineage. I've had many occasions as a child where I've been exposed to very bad things and attachments, I'm sure, latched on even then, and it's difficult at times, and at times unexplainable to me to see that side of it, because the traditional church is not addressing those situations, those thoughts, and it irritates me to no end, because then you're getting into this theosophical discussion, mm-hmm. with professors, people of the clergy, and then I've done so much research, as Mona knows, just reading about what some of the churches actually stand for and what are their actual origins, and they're frightening. So then you have to literally rethink your entire heritage and origins, and that takes some time. And along with that, occasionally you'll have these voices, or in my case, most of the time that I have these apparitions, if you will, or things that try to attack me, it's always in my sleep. It is always in my sleep. So it's frightening, but at the same time, I'm learning to write things down when I wake up, because I think that it's prophetic in many ways. I know that dream interpretation is very powerful, and not only that, but I think people can speak to us in our dreams and messages, and I pay attention to that now in a very large way. So it's something that the church, the institution, as you would put it, is failing in a very grandiose scale. It's just an atrocity.
Well, people are voting with their feet on that one. They're not going back. Religion, as was once known in the United States from, say, up until maybe about 1990, there were still a lot of churches that were very, very busy. There are still some mega churches, around, but people are leaving standardized religion because it doesn't address the three questions that everyone wants answered as far as spirituality goes, and they're completely missing the boat. They're in there with the warmongers. They're up there pounding the gavel, saying, you know, it's all hellfire and brimstone, which people now realize it isn't, mm-hmm. unless that's what you want it to be.
Yeah.
And so, you know, they're leaving and they're looking elsewhere for their answers as far as spirituality goes. Now, I was going to mention this because of a particular thing that happened with me. I love telepathy.
Mm-hmm.
I am never happier than when I have people that I can connect to on the other side of the world and know that we're connecting, you know, spiritually on some thought or whatever. And then you get it, you know, verified later on, or they call right that minute or whatever.
Right, yeah.
And when I decided to leave California for a number of reasons, and I wanted to live in the Pacific Northwest.
Mm-hmm.
So I did research for a year, and then I planned my 2,400-mile trip and went all over the place. One of the places that I went, and I have to be honest, there wasn't for very good reasons. It was going to be generally a free place to stay.
Mm-hmm.
And a fellow that I had met online in a chat room called Stonehenge at spiritweb.org, which is now defunct, I believe, he was always talking about UFOs flying over his place every night.
And now, what area was this again?
This is up at Trout Lake in Washington, Yakima Indian Reservation,
okay.
Mount Adams area. And the Native Americans up there have legends hundreds and hundreds of years old of their star, that they know that they are star people, that they didn't come to, they came to planet Earth with their ancestors or because of their ancestors. They know that the Earth is not their source, their origin. And they see it all the time too. I don't know why this area is so heavy with UFO activity, but I really like this person that I was talking to. We got along really well. We started doing clearings of unseen negative influences together. He taught me a lot of different ways to discern things. And so I didn't want to think that he was crazy, but something was wrong to me. If mm-hmm. you're publicly saying that you've got UFOs showing up over your house every night, surely someone would want to come and see that.
Yeah.
The news, or someone. And so I was going to kill two birds with one stone, get a free place to stay, and see if this guy was nuts or not. And people at that time would just show up at his ranch. His name is James Gilliland. The ranch is now called Isetti. And people would just show up from around the world because he had written some books about all of these things. And they would find out where the ranch was, and they would just go for the same reason. I'm here to see the UFOs.
Hmm.
I'm going to call your bluff, dude. Where are they?
Yeah.
And so none of us knew each other. I knew him from online, but there were other people from Portland and I'd never met before. And we sat outside as the sun went down, and everyone was excited, you know, waiting to see a UFO for the first time. And I was mentally thinking very loudly that if there was such a thing, it could happen. I would like for it to happen now, and I would like for it to be unforgettable. Mm-hmm. You know?
Mm-hmm.
I was in the prove it to me mode in my head.
Yeah.
And I felt it was as if someone just took my head and turned it to the left and said, look over here. And I looked, and here's this globe way up in the sky. It wasn't close at all. It was much further away in height than what Mount Adams is. And I didn't want to take my eyes off of it. So with my right hand, I'm reaching for James, right? Mm-hmm. But I'm not taking my eyes off to the left over these trees. And I'm going, I couldn't even speak. I'm yanking on him. You know, is that one? And he said, oh, here we go. And everyone turned. And this thing came in close. And it looked like a ball of light. And we all got up and were just wandering towards it, you know, like zombies, you know, and with our mouths hanging open. And it did the most amazing things. It changed shape.
Oh.
James took a high-powered flashlight kind of a thing, and he made a great triangle with the light, you know, with his movements. And he did that about three times, just drawing into the air the shape of a triangle. And this UFO, because I don't know what it was,
mm-hmm.
Morphed into the shape of a triangle.
So whatever and he would draw with the flashlight would...
Well, there was communication definitely going on.
Wow.
So that's my point. And everyone was really excited. Went on for about 15 minutes, and it would come and go, and it would disappear completely, and then reappear in an instant. And finally, it didn't come back, and we all were tired, and we went back to sit at the picnic table. And I just thought, I need to see that one more time. If you really came here, whoever you are, mm-hmm. Whatever you are, I really need to see it one more time so that I can believe it, that it happened, and that we were having this communication, and no one else was looking in the direction I was looking in. And I looked up just a little bit, and it came back, like, just for me.
Huh.
Nobody else saw it.
Now, how close to you was it, do you think? I mean...
It's very hard to judge, but it was as close as, it was much closer than, say, an airliner, a passenger plane would be. It was in that,
That range of that range of distance.
Yeah, that was about as, you know, it got closer than that, but it also got very far away. And instantly. Never seen anything move that fast.
Wow. Mind.
So they're having up at East SETI, and you can find this by going to ECETI.org. They're having a conference over July 4th weekend, and they're also having an ambassador training to teach people how to experience these things and grow some more. And I would just suggest to your listeners, if they can go, they should, because it really happens every night. And not only does it really happen every night, but James can get in meditation the exact time that they're going to show up.
Wow.
And they do.
And his name again is James. James Gillian?
James Gilliland.
Gilliland.
He's pretty famous in the UFO community, and this is why.
Wow.
But he puts on conferences with amazing speakers, and the people all go out. We're talking PhD academics and so forth, and there's what we call a field of dreams between his ranch and Mount Adams, which is where you see a lot of the activity. And people go out there and they get, they all see the same things. So when they come back in on Saturday morning for the core conference, mm-hmm. they're like little giddy children.
Wow.
Because they've seen UFOs, they've seen orbs.
Sure.
It's fantastic. It's.
Well, I can imagine
something that could have been going on 10,000 years ago there. Wow. With drumming circles and flutes, and so that was a big step forward for me.
Yeah.
In believing in various forms of communication with other beings other than just human beings.
Yeah.
You're apparently talking also with you and with me right now as we're talking, getting feedback. It's just interesting.
I'm having a little bit of audio.
Yeah, the audio started echoing. So I've been ignoring it.
So it's echoing for you, but because it's a little unclear. So actually, Aaron, could you repeat what the last thing you said? Because I didn't hear.
I was just basically stating that everything appeared to be fine until we were really getting into the UFO discussion, and then it started to be influenced, you know, coincidence or not. I don't know.
Well, I was thinking the same thing, so I don't know if there's...
I'm still getting the audio interference on my voice and Aaron's.
And Aaron's,
not on
yeah.
Yours, Thomas.
Yeah, and I'm hearing the same thing. Interesting, though, that it did, as Aaron pointed out, it started talking about the UFOs. I don't know.
Well, that always happens.
Yeah. Interesting.
That could mean any of 100 things that it happened right then.
Yeah.
You get used to it.
Aaron, I wanted to comment on something you said just before Mona was talking about the UFOs, which was a great, great story, Mona, and people should look into that. And I would love to go myself if I could.
Well,
do
things
that.
Are coming up. Let's make a road trip.
Yeah, really. I could.
Yes.
I got some time. Maybe I could do that.
Well, let's work that out. It's great fun.
You were talking about the church and, you know, this subject. And it's interesting. I was born and raised Catholic. And I've not really been affiliated or associated with it much since a lot of these things happened to me. However...
I'm nodding to you on the radio.
Okay. Thank you. Ironically, though, see, the interesting thing is, because of the experiences that I've had that I've talked about tonight, I sought out some sort of explanation, and that is specifically seeing in my mind's eye and communicating with a deceased person to somebody else. So I read Teresa Caputo's book. Now, Teresa Caputo, you probably know, is famous for being the Long Island medium. And she is also born and raised Catholic. And her story is very interesting. Mona, you will probably agree with this, and that is she resisted it the longest time. And... was very ill for the longest time until she stopped resisting it. And then once she accepted it, and she prayed to God, and she certainly believes in God. And but the thing I wanted to comment on, Aaron, was that despite her ability to help people by talking to deceased relatives and to solve conflicts that people have had, and one person dies, and then they, you know, to get a message that you are forgiven, I am forgiven, we're all forgiven. Her church still doesn't like her to focus on it, to talk about it in church. But the irony too is that the Catholic Church has exorcists. They still have exorcists.
And they need them.
And they still have exorcists.
And they still have them, absolutely. Yes.
So it's, yes. I think it's kind of similar, Mona, to what you were saying at the very beginning of the program about keeping us, keeping the people in a certain state of fear, not knowing everything.
State of fear.
Yes.
And at odds.
Yeah.
Between men and women, the biggest us versus them is the God question. Because up until recently in history, God has always been him.
Yes.
What does that say to a young girl going to church?
Oh, sure. Absolutely.
You're step down, sister.
Yeah.
You know, you don't rate.
Yeah.
And so, these agencies, and the church to me is just another agency that needs money all the time.
Mm-hmm.
They want to keep you away from your soul purpose and your strength and your center.
Yes.
And it happens everywhere. It isn't just in the church. It's everywhere in our culture.
Oh,
and it's
absolutely
propagated by the elite and the powers that be to keep people scared and struggling to survive, so that they don't even have the time to look into anything extracurricular like spirituality that we're talking about, or UFOs, or whatever.
Mona, that's a major theme of this show when we're not doing paranormal things or talking about social media. If I'm doing a political show, which is usually the case, that's like a major theme. President Hoover once addressed a group of advertising people and genuinely, sincerely thanked them for making, quote, "Thank you for making people constantly moving happiness machines." Just,
right.
You know, intent on buying and,
yeah.
You know.
Just keep shopping.
Yeah, I mean, look at that. That was right after 9/11. That was George Bush's recommendation. Other countries were mourning after 9/11, but we kept on rolling.
Yes, we did.
Kept on rolling, and we're told, go shopping. I mean, that's what we actually say.
Well, I would like to say one thing briefly to the people who are still with the churches and so forth. Just think of this one thing that Jesus, or Esau, as I refer to it, said that all Christians should really be aware of. He said, all these things and more will you do if you follow my instruction. But when you look around at the churches today or any other time, is anyone doing a miracle? Are they raising the dead? Are they healing the blind? No. They're just going in and getting the crap scared out of them. And then they pay their money. They compare what they're wearing and clothes. And they go home, and it's just absolutely hollow. That it has nothing to do with what Christ had to say, which is that you are all God, and you.
Go ahead. Hello.
If your church isn't giving that to you, I would ask them why. If it was me.
Ladies and gentlemen. You have been listening to a great show. I really enjoyed it. I want to thank the two of you. You've been listening to Mona Lee McKay and Aaron Milburn as we come to another ending of the Sabina Veritas show. And we'll be with you again next Thursday at 8 p.m. Pacific time and 11 p.m. Eastern time. And we will see you at that time.
Thank you so much for having
us on. You're welcome always. Thank you.
Meeting is adjourned. Oh, I am sorry, sir. I didn't mean to overstep my bounds. You say that.
What?
Meeting is adjourned.
It is?
No, you say that, Governor.
What?
Meeting is adjourned.
It is?
The end. By George, he's got it.
It is the end.
No, that'll be all. Just be sure to lock the door behind you on your way out. Good night.